Welcome to Editing Aloud with the panel of South Africa's top journalists. Guys, this week has been a disaster in terms of Eskom history, which is not exactly unimpeachable as it is. To start with Sekonati, who knows quite a bit about Eskom, what actually happened? 4,000 megawatts shed from the national grid? I mean, how serious is that?
4,000 megawatts is a big deal. The last time we had that amount of power being cut off was in 2015. Late 2014, early 2015, when Eskom ran out of coal. And that doesn't mean South Africa ran out of coal, but just no one bothered to buy and bring coal into the power stations. That's what has happened this time around, except this time it's been going on for over 2 years. In addition, the power stations are breaking left, right and center. And the nastiest surprise is that it's the new power stations that are breaking down. At Medupi, we are supposed to have 2,400 megawatts coming from three generation units. They are operating at an average capacity of 60%. They are not reliable.
And that's not even all of the units at Medupi.
Yes, half the station is connected, but half of the half is only generating.
So is this a failure of the actual infrastructure they built, or is it a long-term failure of planning? Is it a failure of coal purchasing?
That's what happens when you get politicians to design power stations. So no one is able to take up the ash from the coal they burn. And they are, you know, Hitachi and Alstom, they failed even from the start. So Eskom now admits that it's bad design and poor implementation or poor workmanship by these contractors. So that's the thing. It's not like you can just fix it tomorrow.
I mean, Patrick Bulger, you saw Pravin Gordhan's announcement on this. I mean, what did you make of it? I mean, his discussion of the fact that we built these power stations and it sounds like it's a wreck.
Yeah, sometimes the best news comes in the most indistinguishable packaging. I mean, I thought for Pravin Gordhan to announce yesterday, and it was hardly in the form of an announcement. It was a casual aside that these stations, and I'm not blaming him directly in saying this, these stations are badly designed and badly constructed. I mean, this, you know, it's in those few words that we are seeing the full spectre of meltdown emerging here. To think that Eskom has sat for years and years and years with the prices spiraling at these two stations, and that no one at any point has said. Apparently there was some World Bank report some time ago warning about these stations. But I mean, this is going down as probably one of our worst economic planning decisions, infrastructure decisions, that this country has ever seen in its entire history.
Absolutely. Jana, I mean, on this point, I mean, how does this happen? The politicians, this is really recently that it happened, that we built Medupi and Kusile. How is it that we got it so wrong on that? I mean, did nobody see this? We always have Eskom disasters and then 1,000 people afterwards saying, I told you so. But why is it that at the time nobody said, I told you so about this plan?
I don't think that's fair to say. I think a lot of people warned at the time that you have a power utility that hasn't built new power stations in a decade, embarking on trying to build the two biggest power stations in the world at the same time. There were various other options on the table, but of course the kickbacks, the bigger the power station, the bigger the potential kickback. So I don't think it's fair to say nobody's been warning about this. But also, I don't think we should give Pravin Gordhan or the existing management team an easy ride, because they've been there for at least a year. Now suddenly they realize they don't have the right engineers. They have to bring in people from outside. They've got 50,000 people there. How does it take a year to notice, oh, maybe we need to get some experts from outside because actually we don't know what we're doing? Yeah, so I think absolutely. That's very concerning.
So if we were warned about this, which we were warned about this, why did nobody do anything about it? Why does nothing happen until we reach crisis point?
I don't think I'm the right person to answer that. I mean, but that is the question, and it's not only at Eskom. You see it everywhere else. You see it at the BIC. You see it at SARS. I mean, and I think, you know, at the NPA, we kind of watch these slow motion train accidents. You know, you see it coming, but nobody seems to have the power to stop it.
Ron, I mean, your thoughts. Why did we do nothing about this? I mean, how serious is it? I mean, how possible is it to fix this current scenario in the longer term so we don't have this in 10 years' time?
I mean, the ultimate, the fundamental question with Eskom again is its debt, right? And the servicing of that debt is what was led to the maintenance not being done on everything. Right? They're behind by years on maintenance on most of their power stations. So until like we deal with the debt issue, either government, however the solution is, that is only time when Eskom can maintain its actual power stations, right? And so the issue with Medupi and Kusile, there was stuff about Hitachi about 5 years back about the welding. So we had these things that this thing is not a perfect build. And of course it wouldn't be, right? Eskom doesn't they build something on this nature. It was decades, years and years ago. So these two bills were not going to come on seamlessly. We kind of, in our back of our heads, we all kind of knew these are a problem child. It'll take a while to be fully operational to our system. But what's happening in the meantime, there's over 440 billion in debt, and they have to service this thing. And the one thing that's suffered from it is maintenance. And as the longer we go on not finding a final solution to it and fighting over privatization, partial, or whatever the case may be, or government take, they're going to continue to have to service that debt and less maintenance. It's almost, that's what they juggle. And this period, that's how Eskom will move until the stations kill over, right? And so unless someone has big, almost on television, big balls enough to go and say, and lead and say, look, we're partially privatizing Eskom. But in a sense, there is privatization in Eskom already because of IPPs and generation and so on. So just have balls. Someone must do it, right? You can't sit there and listen to Julius Malema or all manner of, and just, it's the only solution. There's nothing else before Eskom, before balance sheet, baby. Balance sheet. That's it. Fix that thing.
So, second, on that point, I mean, unbundling Eskom like the president suggested, I mean, does that, you're right that they don't have money to put into enough maintenance, but would that correct things? I don't think it would immediately correct things, would it? It would take a while.
No, the separation into three different entities on its own does absolutely nothing to fix what's wrong on the ground. What you do need is inject the money, even through a private investment, like Ron is suggesting. But that's not the only thing. Again, you need the government to throw in, let's say, 100 billion rand. I have been saying for the past 3 years, 50 billion rand, but that was 3 years ago. If we talk about it again some more, we'll be talking about 200 billion rand next year.
That's sad,
Because the machines are not waiting. They keep breaking down. So what needs to be done, and of course the lead in business day to day, as Pravin Gordhan said yesterday, all of a sudden we know that Eskom needs experts. I would have thought
we've had enough of the amateurs. Let's get the experts.
But in truth, Eskom has experts. It's the thing about, like, this is coming back to Gordhan Ramaphosa. The politicians are rubbish at messaging. Like, it's, remember when Goldfields brought in Australians to fix their problems and sent them back home? Because South Africa's been mining for 100 years. South Africa does actually, I think we have the experts. Why are you pushing the crisis? Like, politicians and their messaging just really kind of pisses me off sometimes.
We're not expert enough to avoid the president emerging shamefaced from the State of the Nation address. And he says he's shocked and angry. And of course, the immediate response is, well, it's an operational issue. Well, on the one hand, it is an operational issue. On the other hand, to go for the first time, I understand, in our history, to stage four load shedding without the president, who's made a big deal about it just 3-4 days before in Parliament, without him, it seems that I learnt of stage four load shedding at the same time as him. What's the point of being president?
Exactly. When every single editorial ever written about Cyril Ramaphosa's term as president started off with the one big thing he has to fix right from the beginning is Eskom. That's not as if what's happening at Eskom should be a major surprise to him, do you think, Jana?
No, absolutely not. I think it's the one thing we all should be having sleepless nights over. I mean, every other plan...
Certainly having dark nights.
You can't... by candlelight. I mean, every other plan he has hinges on Eskom working. You're not going to get the foreign investment in. You're not going to get economic growth going. You're not going to, you're not going to create jobs if there's no power. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I mean, I feel sorry for Tito Mboweni next week, who has to miraculously find billions and billions of rand to help prop up Eskom.
No, hundreds.
Hundreds of billions.
Of billions of rand.
Yeah. I mean,
it was just billions in Sekonati's initial request.
It's going to bankrupt us all. I mean, the credit rating agencies must be wringing their hands waiting for
Moody's
this thing to downgrade us.
And Now let's recap and remind the viewers about these two power stations. On the 7th of August 2007, a chief executive of Eskom by the name of Jacob Maruha turned the sword on Medupi in Lephalale and said in 5 years' time we'll be finished. That 5 years was supposed to be in 2012. We are now in 2019. Only half the Medupi power station is complete, but even that, the shoddy work, there's now a bill, a repair bill of 8 billion rand that needs to be, so we need to find 8 billion rand to fix what we've delayed 5 years.
And still failed to deliver.
Yeah, and Kusile in outside Witbank, we were supposed to be finished in 2014. We are now in 2019 and only two units have been connected to the grid, and those two units are only operating at a capacity of 60%.
So, Ron, in terms of this, how bad is load shedding get from here for the average person who sees Eskom as a name, you know, a name in the utility bills, but then ultimately has to deal with the consequence of this? How bad is it going to get for people in their businesses and homes?
I don't know. I mean, I think for a big business, the thing about the good thing about Eskom is problems the past 10 years. Big business has almost diversified the risk from Eskom. So I don't think, like, the big miners and so on, I don't think they'll cry as much as they would have 10 years ago. So, but for small business, I'm sure there's a big hit coming from the fact, like, when you go to all these, like, I went to Nando's yesterday and they closed for the whole day. So there are all these small businesses, right, that will struggle from this. But instead of big business, I mean, if you look at the mining sector,
yes, the miners will cry, definitely.
But not,
if you have...
But they have reduced their use of...
If you have 400,000 people down in the mine, across all the sectors, and without warning, Eskom switches off because it says stage 4.
Sibanye has its own power.
You've got 100,000 people underground. But you've got one thing coming. And if we think this is the worst of load shedding, wait until it rains in Mpumalanga.
Oh, so there's a load shedding schedule 5?
We'll go all the way to stage 6, but wait until the coal is wet and they cannot burn it. Then you have a really big problem in your hands.
I think one of the things, Jana, to me that I think is problematic is the president has been talking in the State of the Nation and at the mining in Durban last week about, you know, this cliched message of we're open for business. But this illustrates that not only are we not really open for business, but also the president really isn't in control of what's happening. I mean, is that a fair statement to make?
Yeah, and I think you're not only seeing it on the economy side, you're also seeing it on international relations, for example. You know, what a mess that whole issue around, you know, summoning the five of our biggest investors because somebody got upset that somebody dared make proposals about how we can actually unlock investment in South Africa. So I think, you know, I think he's trying to fix so many things at the same time that there are just balls dropping on the floor all over. You know, the presidential health summit, we had feedback yesterday. President was supposed to be giving it, he didn't arrive, or this morning. You know, it's just the list of things that he has to do is so long that you probably can't blame him that a few things are falling through the cracks. But really, Eskom is one of the things that shouldn't be falling through the cracks.
And what's happened is that KASATU, the biggest labor union in this country, has gone on strike today and plans to strike next week in Cape Town. Patrick, part of the issue is Eskom, but I mean, in terms of the strike, it's not sort of the mass impact on the economy that you would have seen, say, 15, 20 years ago, right?
Sure. I mean, with much of the economy shut down anyway today, you know, it's difficult to notice the sort of incremental increase that there would be with KASATU on strike. And again, underlines the sort of impotence, really, that we see demonstrated by, unfortunately, by KASATU, by the unions. Obviously, again, the sort of shutdown, or the labor shutdown, the impetus is in the main, as far as I can see, is from the public sector unions, you know, which are already on a fairly good deal. Forefront, Nahawu, Popcrew, okay, Norman Sakawu thrown in there. But, you know, this is to be fair to them, it's a national shutdown over job losses, but again, self-defeating, I would think. I mean, isn't this, you know, in a way, sort of leading to even more job losses, with employers sort of scrambling to see, right, How are we going to do without ESCOM? How are we going to do without organized labor? And, you know, and making plans to lessen the reliance on these two sort of unreliable, if you like, sectors.
I'm dying
because Ron, I mean, as well, another thing is that the budget next week is going to announce cuts in terms of public spending, in terms of what people can spend. The public sector unions are going to have a lot more to complain about soon. I mean, surely, where does this end in terms of their disillusionment with job cuts?
Yeah, I mean, as Patrick was saying, COSATU is more or less the public sector union federation, workers' federation, given that NUMSA is important and NUMSA is more important to, I guess, ESCOM and functioning. And so going forward, what TISO can do in terms of cutting jobs in public, that's they'll be to see how they react. But you know what, the funniest thing is when the public sector kind of strikes, the economy just buzzes along. It kind of tells you a lot about us and how we operate with the public sector, that COSATU can strike all they want, and the only pool they really have is in public sector and the economy generally. I mean, unions have been, as was during the break, and Sekonati have been broken over the past decade or so. So Jacob Zuma's rule has done what Thabo Mbeki once dreamed of doing, where actually COSATU is impotent since Avavi left, since he went out. So as a union, as a strength in the country, I don't recall. No one actually sees COSATU anymore as that powerful base it once was.
So Yana, I mean, part of the thing is that the irony, of course, is that Ramaphosa himself came from the union movement, and now the unions are protesting what he wants to do and what he already has done. What does this mean in terms of COSATU's kind of support for the ANC in the election, as well as the dynamics around Ramaphosa?
Well, they've threatened that they, you know, thinking of withdrawing support for the ANC ahead of the elections. I don't think the ANC really cares. I mean, as Ron has just explained, I mean, do we really care what COSATU does anymore? They seem to be very insignificant. But to that point, I think Business Day, my completely biased opinion, has a lovely column in today about the unions, and the point that's made is that, you know, they come with all this noise. It's complaining and protesting against everything and anything that's being put on the table, but you're not actually seeing any proposals. Instead of saying, okay, we're completely opposed to ESCOM, but this is our plan on how you can fix it. You know, you don't see that. And I think that speaks to a lack of leadership that we're seeing not only in the unions, but really across South African society. You know, I think almost everyone is in crisis from the political, the media industry, the unions. I mean, you really, there's just this dearth of leadership. And we're all just kind of dying for somebody to have the balls to stand up and start doing the right things and start doing anything, really.
We're back on the balls again.
Yeah.
Sekonathi, ESCOM is not allowed to. The workers aren't allowed to strike, right? Because they're essential workers.
And they strike anyway.
They strike anyway. I mean, what does this mean for them? Because ESCOM's issue, like Ron has said, is debt. So in terms of this issue, what can they really do? What can they influence?
Rob, we need to do the honorable thing, as Ron has suggested. We need to thank Jacob Zuma for breaking the back of COSATU.
That's an unusual plea.
This is probably the only thing that we'll ever thank him for breaking the back of COSATU.
Not necessarily a good thing. I'm not saying it's a great thing, right? That's what he's done.
Yes, and indeed, today all our colleagues here at work, no one has been intimidating from staying out away from the office and everything. So the economy is chugging along. It's the parts that have not been working anyway that are quiet. Think Home Affairs, for example, or even think ESCOM. What do we do? What was your question? What do we do?
What can workers do about the debt issue?
Look, workers don't, unfortunately for them, they never have the problem of providing solutions or making anything work. So they will harp on about everything and nothing and do nothing. And of course, when you graduate from the Patrice Lumumba School of Socialism, there's a university in Russia by that name, which teaches socialism, then you get the people to come and lead trade unions. Shoot yourself in both feet and hope everything will be fine tomorrow. Self-defeating, you're striking for jobs, and guess who's striking for jobs? It's the people who have jobs. Who's speaking for the jobless people in this country? Absolutely nobody.
Yeah, the 37% of people who can't get jobs.
Yep. No one speaks for the unemployed people. You would see, I could use another term on TV, but I won't. You would see a whole lot of violence if while the people who have jobs are out marching against what they call disinvestment, then the people without jobs go and work in their places, then all the strikes would die.
So, Patrick, get back to you too. Another institution that Jacob Zuma caused a lot of devastation at,
HR Revenue Service. Thank him for.
No, we're not going to thank him for this one. Yesterday, Tom Moyane, the former commissioner, lost his bid to be reinstated to appeal Ramaphosa's firing of him. Is this the end for Tom Moyane? Please say it so.
Well, I just wondered to myself how much this must be costing Moyane. I mean, it must be... And apart from personal pride and
people who visited Dubai in December 2015,
yes,
don't have to worry about costs.
They don't have to worry about the costs. But I would think it's the end, isn't it? You know, constitutional court. What's his next step?
So, Ron, in terms of the shortlist of people, there is now a shortlist of people to be interviewed for the top job of commissioner.
Yeah.
Who's on the list? I mean, and what do you think of the prospects of that? I mean, all of them seem like obviously a much better bet than Tom Moyane.
Yeah, anything better than anyone would be better than Tom Moyane at this point, which is a scary thing. Anything but Zuma, I think. But I haven't seen the names on the list at the moment, so unfortunately, I won't be able.
Well, it's guys like
names.
Mark Kingon, Hlengani Matabula, Randall Karelison, Jean Revele. Terence Mbembe is on the list, the former Auditor General.
Matabula is definitely not on the list.
Okay.
He's an ex-Moyane man, and we got confirmation if you read Business Day today.
I just read yesterday's one.
So,
I don't expect to change every day.
Apparently, the fact that his name was circulated amongst us, you know, that it was there was okay. Speculation that he's one of the shortest people, apparently caused quite a bit of anxiety at SARS. He's not a loved figure there, but we got confirmation that he's certainly not on the list. So sorry, but continue.
And in terms of those guys, I mean, Yana, what are your thoughts? I mean, Nombembe's got quite a good record.
Yeah, I think there's like you said, basically everyone on the list certainly would be an improvement. And I think they're all quite a few ex, very senior SARS people. And I think they'll obviously look for certain set of skills, people who not only have the institutional knowledge, but would also be able to revive a place that's, you know, very down-spirited, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any of them well enough to be saying, you know, this is who I put my money on.
No, Maria Ramos on the list.
Maria Ramos, thank you very much. Jean Revele is one of the very... He's actually the very first person that Jacob Zuma and Tom Moyane went after. He headed that high-risk unit together with Johan...
Van
Lochrenberg. So he was Johan's boss. This was the core, the people that brought in about 40% of SARS' revenue every year. And he was hounded out because, of course, he allowed Johan Van Lochrenberg to investigate the tax affairs of people like Jacob Zuma and indeed what's the tobacco company there was a company also called ATM
Carnelinks
and there was a company in ATM. Which Edward Zuma was a director. All those guys whose tax affairs were not in order had friends in the Zuma household and camp, and then of course you had Jean Revele headed those investigations, and actually Jean Revele is the reason SARS was broken up, because he was so good at his job.
Okay, so we're going to see a lot of just how broken SARS might have been in next week's budget when Tito Mboweni stands up in Parliament. Quickly, guys, we've only got a couple of minutes, but Yana, what do you expect from the budget next week? Any big surprises?
I think the big thing that I'll be watching is who gets bailouts and how much and how he actually plans to finance it. I think the problem is that they've always been promising lots of cuts on spending, but you never see the cuts really being implemented. So that is going to be the big problem, is where does the money come from to help keep helping all these parastatals.
Good point. Patrick, do you think there'll be a rise in personal income tax, VAT again? I don't know if they can do that.
Whichever way they structure it, Rob, it's going to be more pain. You're going to be paying, you know, whether they kind of leave the brackets as they are. You know, at this point, it seems that the hapless middle class working taxpayer seems to be about the only sort of functioning entity in the country. And we can be absolutely confident that this entity will be taxed far more than it itself ever thought itself capable of enduring.
Your tax on your spirits.
Personally, I'm not, no.
And Ron, in terms of, you know, do you think there'll be a sovereign wealth fund, for example? Do you think there'll be anything new on land? Any idea of how that's going to be funded?
Given that it's Tito Mboweni speaking, no. But those are all wishy-washy things. Mboweni isn't... If it was Gigaba, oh, yeah, hell yeah. He'd be talking about sovereign wealth funds and all these future
scenarios. As well as his great suits.
And great suits, right? So, yeah. Mboweni's realist. He'll come out at 100 billion rand for Eskom. There will be an announcement. I think debt to GDP will rise slightly. But there'll be some realism. I mean, we have someone there who actually... You know, when I see Mboweni talk, he doesn't really care about where his state is in the party. So I think someone, a very realist budget, but he will come with the 100 billion rand injection for Eskom. He can't push it off, can't delay it. So we will have that figure. And we'll know, and it's borrowings, right? There's no way else to go for this thing at the moment. So, and there will be that.
Second, your last word, 100 billion rand for Eskom, that's not going to fix it, is it?
No, it's not. But there's Eskom, SABC, Denel, South African Airways, Post Office, and so the only cut you don't want to miss is that man's cut there. Mboweni has no, I don't know where he's going to get the money.
Okay, well, that's a cut from us. So join us next week where we'll talk about what actually did happen in the budget. It's our special edition next week. We'll be going live in the evening. And thanks for watching.